Hello, I'm Shelley Wood, the managing editor for Heartwire, and my guests here today are Dr. Tim Gardner, Dr. Cindy Grinds, and Dr. Sanjay Kaul. We are at the ACC meeting in San Francisco, where we had the biggest news of the meeting, perhaps, was that one of the spotlight trials was yanked at the last minute because of an embargo break, this time on behalf of the sponsor of that trial. I think it was really the thing that had the buzz on the first day of the meeting. Many people had come to see these results with the Watchman device that, of course, has been discussed in other programs on the heart.org. But it led to a lot of arguing, I think, about the value of the embargo process. We were in a situation where the media had been in possession of the data for several days. We had done interviews. In many cases, we'd written our stories. And suddenly, this was no longer news. It was not going to be presented, and we could report on it, but it wasn't an ACC late-breaking clinical trial anymore. So my question to the three of you is, was this the right decision for the ACC? Was this the right punishment for the company that apparently accidentally let this data out early? What can we take away from what happened at ACC? Dr. Gardner.
Sure. It was technically an embargo break, but it was because Boston Scientific apparently released information about the trial results 3 hours early on New York time as opposed to California time. I think it was, I chaired the Heart Association Program Committee for a couple of years, and it's very important for the integrity of the meeting to avoid embargo breaks. But I think that they may have overreacted a bit here. I think that they, and I say that respectfully, they want to keep the discipline involved, but I think the three-hour difference here was an honest mistake, and a lot of people were disappointed in the audience.
So I was actually at my computer at 6:30 in the morning, and I was one of these apparently limited groups of journalists and investors who received this information. And I immediately wrote back and I said, did you just break your own embargo? And they wrote back and said, oh no, this went, you know, I spoke to the media guy. He said this went to a limited number of people. The embargo still holds. But for one, we don't know how limited is limited. And these were investors as well as journalists.
Yes.
It was a Saturday that this happened, and maybe that's important. But there are implications of doing that. And you know, if there is no punishment, is that what's one reason that we don't want this to happen any further? Dr. Grimes.
Well, why should the investors get the information before the public?
Or the physicians who would be using these.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was actually on the committee and on the conference call that morning that made this decision. I don't understand why the investors would have information that the physicians don't even have. And I was on the committee that had the conference call that morning that made the decision to pull the study. And I can tell you it was not just a single event that happened. Throughout the week, there were numerous events.
That's right.
There were questions about the data, how much would be presented. Initially, it was going to be only the safety endpoint. We talked about pulling
it. There were a lot of things.
Okay. Yeah, pulling it at that point because that's not what the abstract read. There's a question about whether the data, the primary endpoints, were changing. And so it wasn't until the last minute we decided to even put it on the program. And then when the embargo break occurred,
That was the final straw.
Final straw.
So then my question would be, if there hadn't been that lead up with these problems, with these miscommunications, let's say, would the ACC have taken the same action if it had been a single thing? The company had sent out an investor relations note with data early. Is that enough to say, no, that cannot be presented now?
Probably the same thing would have happened because we had a similar heart failure study that was taken away from the late breaking and put into one of the higher level research presentations.
Okay.
Exactly. And so I think the way they look at it is if you give all the primary endpoint data, then you no longer qualify for a late breaking. Now, Champion, for example, they put out an early release that their primary endpoint was positive, but they gave no data.
Right.
They said right in their press release, which happened actually a month earlier, they said the final results will be presented at ACC, and their lips were sealed for the next month.
And I bumped into Deepak Bhatt in the hallway, the day before Champion came out, and I could tell he was nervous that something was going to happen to Champion. But yeah. Dr. Kaul, you think there's another component of this, and that is the whole structure of late-breaking clinical trials. What do we need to do there?
Well, I think we have to ensure that the information is presented in a much more informed, disciplined, and rigorously controlled environment. I mean, that's what the purpose of the embargo is.
No offense, but that does sound kind of boring.
Yeah, but that another purpose of the embargo is to make sure that you're not manipulating the market. That was obviously not the case here. The market was closed. This was a weekend. Mm-hmm. So that certainly didn't factor into that. And so I would say that, personally, even though I recognize what the role of these late-breaking clinical trials are, I think the whole process will be improved if it's presented in a much more controlled environment, where all the information is vetted and scrutinized and passes the peer review muster, mm-hmm. and then be presented. Even if the embargo had not been broken and PREVAIL had been presented, I'm not quite sure there would have been much greater clarity than what we have now.
Dr. Gardner's shaking his head a little bit.
Well, that wouldn't be a late-breaking clinical trial then. I mean, that the format is that your investigators submit information that they will have the trial data available at the time of presentation. No one has seen it.
No, I'm talking about the peer review process with the simultaneous publication of the manuscript, which didn't happen here.
Right, and I mean, that's possible. You could make that a rule that they have to have submitted a manuscript.
Right.
But then why go to a meeting? Why, if everything's going to come out simultaneously in the New England Journal of Medicine, why not just stay at home and read about it on the website, read about it on theheart.org?
Which is exactly what people are doing. Why do you think the attentions are dropping?
Well, what do we lack then? I mean, I'm not a physician, but presumably it's a lot of the hallway chit-chat, which is a reason for getting together and sharing ideas and presumably getting excited about seeing new data about a crazy device you're putting in the heart.
I agree with that completely. I think that there is an important role for interaction and for reflection from the press and for expert comment, and just like we had today at the heart show, the cardiology show, that, you know, That's an element that you won't get by just reading the paper.
No, but I'm not disagreeing with that. But I'm just saying that one of the criteria for a late-breaking clinical trial should be that it should have been vetted properly, have gone through the peer review process, and whether there is a publication at the same time or not, or whether it's being accepted for publication, that's a different matter.
That is a slightly different issue. In this case, I think what went wrong here and what seems to go wrong in other situations is that a select group of individuals are given data early to do their reportage, to do whatever else they're going to do with it. And then 2 days later, it's released. In this case, that process broke down. And I guess my question is, what do we lose if we get rid of that embargo altogether? You still have a late-breaking clinical trial session, but you don't provide the press with early versions of things. You don't allow the media to conduct interviews and write stories. Nobody knows it except the investors and their mothers or something, you know? Like, what is that the solution for this? Dr. Gardner.
No, I don't think that we need to worry about the process as it has been working. I think it works. I think that occasionally we'll have a unfortunate embargo break like this, and you were involved in one, caught up in one. But I think that the process of allowing the media access to the information so that they can get things right and report about these important findings that are coming out at the meeting is newsworthy. And part of our role here is to educate the public about what's new and important in cardiovascular medicine and surgery.
Dr. Kranz, you had another view on this, though, which is the journalist calling you at 5 p.m. at night and asking you questions about a study you haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I have a problem with the press knowing data that I haven't even seen yet. And I think if the press is going to get easy access to it, why shouldn't the physicians?
Yes, but you can go online. A lot of these things are already online at the day of the meeting, so you can get caught up.
Yeah, but she's talking about when I call her and say, oh, the New England Journal is coming out with this next week, and I've got a copy of it. But, you know, what I would do is I would send it to you and ask you to, but
right.
I appreciate that not everybody has time to do that.
Right. I think that we need to have a certain body that will write guidelines about this, to be honest, because it seems to me a lot of different companies are releasing data to their investors because the Securities and Exchange Commission requires that, but they give them too much data. and then we feel that that's been an embargo violation. So it has to be clearly spelled out what should be released and what is considered a violation for the ACC.
Yeah. I know from the perspective of a reporter, you get hungry for news. But for me, news, if I step back from medicine, I think news is something that's happening like that. It's not something that's going to happen 2 days later at 5:30, you know? So if this is really news that's important to patients' health, I understand that we need to digest it, we need to understand it before we report it to the public. But at a certain point, why is this embargoed at all if it's important for patient care? Anyone?
Well, it adds to the importance of the forum, that is the late-breaking trial plenary session, mm-hmm. a spotlight session, with the additional element of critiques and discussion.
Yeah.
You have a panel that's up there discussing and giving different viewpoints. And then at the press conference, there's also other people speaking. So you're getting more than one voice in the interpretation of that trial.
And that was what didn't happen with PREVAIL, is we had a lot of questions about that trial, and suddenly we didn't get to see the discussants hashing it over, and we didn't have a press conference with a wide variety of people in order to bounce those questions off.
But to be honest, it sounds like, from what you were saying, that there were more problems with this PREVAIL trial than just the embargo break. I mean, there were concerns about the change in protocols and so on along the way.
Yeah, those are rumors. I'm not substantiating that. There was just people came up and said that on one of the websites there was a change in something. And then they said that they weren't even sure it was the exact same protocol. No,
the press release basically from Boston Scientific said that they're only going to present the acute procedural safety data.
Right.
When the late breaker clinical trial abstract that was presented or submitted talked about all three endpoints.
Right.
And then somebody looked at the clinicaltrial.gov website and they found that there were only one endpoint there.
Right.
So, there was a litany of, you know.
This is a whole other conversation for us, I think, probably. But I do think it's not going to be the only time that we're going to see endpoints changed or we're going to see strange things happen in the run-up to a big presentation. I just am not totally sure what serves physicians best and what serves the public best in terms of how to control how quality information gets out. And I'm not sure we've solved the world's problems with this discussion, but maybe a final word. Let's have a final word from each of you on it. If you could change one thing about the way things are working now, what would it be? Or nothing?
I wouldn't change anything. I think this was just an unfortunate series of errors or misfires, and I think we still do a good service by having these important landmark trials presented and with lots of discussion and lots of media attention.
Okay, it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yes.
I would have the society give guidelines to the companies as to what they are allowed to release without violating the embargo, because they have a duty to the investors to release something.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but I think there probably are some that we may not be aware of.
But there should be information.
Exactly.
There's lots of academic institutions and hospitals that put out information to journalists, too, so I don't think we can single out industry necessarily. Everybody is looking for their day in the sun, and they're trying to generate some heat around it.
Mm-hmm.
Those guidelines would have to be for a wider group, I think. Sanjay?
I don't have any solution for the embargo conundrum, but I want the information to be presented in a much more critical, more detailed, more responsible manner. And I'm not sure that the current late-breaking clinical trial is addressing that.
Okay. Well, we might have to revisit this topic sometime. But thanks, all three of you, for speaking with me on it today. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.